Oh, wow.
So you're busy now.
I think we should start today. We're going to have a very short day. The ANC caucus will ask to be released early. We have a meeting. So we'll knock off around 12 o'clock. So, very, very short meeting. Thank you. I had a meeting yesterday with the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Fisheries. They invited us to their oversight visit to the Koran and the area tomorrow. So I just want to check with the members if they are interested in going there. To go and see for ourselves and talk to the parties that are involved without interfering with other processes that are happening in that area. That's it, honorable members. Should we go to the deterrence with them or? That's the demand, sir.
Honorable Mr. Thank you. I think the invite is good. Do you have an idea of what time it's supposed to be?
No.
They didn't say what time.
No, they didn't. I just wanted us to get what you guys are going. I hope that it will be in the morning. Or...
Yes, no, I raise the issue because, as you know, we have caucus on Thursday morning, so it might be difficult for us. But if convenient, we can always, with caucus, if the members are agreed, we can always make a plan.
Honorable Manamela.
Thank you. I was going to raise the issue of the caucus, firstly, and secondly, the questions to the president. Because the details are not clear thus far, I think we could say in principle the portfolio committee can sign two or three people to be part of that delegation, and then let's clarify the details further with the portfolio committee that has invited us, and then we can also decide who from the portfolio committee goes. I think we can ask each of the political parties to send one or two people. That's the first thing. If we could close it in that way, I propose. And then the second thing is, we've been hearing in the news that the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries would be, well, or rather that there will be an inter-ministerial meeting that will be taking place today, and the intention being to review the wage determination. So I think if we could take advantage of the presence of Mr. Mkalipi here, if he is of course able to give us background information on what happened, and then we can then be able to take it from there.
Yeah, thank you, Baya. Honorable Masrum.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We were once in the Western Cape in about 82 farms, remember? And on our way back, we made certain recommendations. I don't remember us getting responses as to what happened there. So I just can't see the reason why we should be going to the Durance, because we haven't as yet heard from the department as to what happened to our recommendations of our oversight in 22 farms in the Western Cape.
Thank you very much.
Not forgetting that Honorable Manamela has requested that we close it in the proposal that he made. But I just want to add that the Durand farm was once visited by the portfolio committee when the eruption of clashes between the foreign nationals and the community there in the farm, in the farming community. Some report was tabled on the situation there. I would request that we maybe give ourselves some time to just to revisit those reports, and so that we can actually try to monitor and see what were, how some of the recommendations that were put forth, if there were ever any action taken around the issues. What I remember in those reports, the issues of the conditions of the workers, their working conditions, including their living conditions, was tabled. So it's just in addition to what Mr. Mule has said, but just specifically focusing on the dwelling itself, was there was an intervention by the portfolio committee to, by the time of the eruption in that community. Thank you.
You're honourable members, any other comment? The let you end up. No, the you went to that area when last year when we visited the farms in the Western Cape. Yeah, and there were things that were supposed to have been follow ups with by the department, and even linking with other departments. So a meeting was scheduled. I don't have my program with me now to meet with the provincial office of labor so that they can brief us about what have they done with the, you know, other things that we arranged during those meetings. There were going to be follow-ups after some 60 days after our visit. So those were some of the reports that we are waiting for. We haven't as yet received them. So, but a meeting is scheduled with the provincial division. Honorable Van der Westhuizen and Honorable Nyagemba.
Chairperson, thank you, and my apologies for joining the meeting late. So I've recently written to the committee secretary to inquire as to what oversight visits are planned, because normally towards the end of the year, beginning of the year, just outside the parliamentary season, we do some oversight visits, and he promised to still come back to me on that one. You will also remember that there was a previous request in this committee that we also go to North West Province and visit some of the mines there to find out for ourselves what the situation is there. So perhaps if we could get that follow-up, as you've said, from the previous visit to the Western Cape farms. What has the department done? How many farmers have complied with the orders that have been issued? But also, it seems to me this is the time of the year where we are able to go and visit places where labor issues are at stake. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Nyagemba.
No, sir, I think Alpi has just arrived. He is in and out. You see, to talk about issues that we seen and heard in the media, also the involvement of the PMA, it was also mentioned, but I think because now he's here, if he can put us in a light. But I think the point that was raised by Honorable Manamela earlier, the issue of the caucus and questions to the president. I think also those are key. But I think the briefing might make us to rethink whether we go alone there at a time that is conducive is not a problem. Because this was just an invitation by a committee that has already planned to go there for tomorrow. But I think let's get the briefing.
Even though the man has been with us here all the time, so but maybe let's hope you've got something to tell us about this. Oh my God.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I started to get involved in this after Honorable Malamea tried last week. We also came in. There was a meeting that was called by the Minister of Agriculture on Saturday. It was in Cape Town. And we had that meeting. And in that meeting, the attempt was to try and persuade parties to come together and reach a settlement. Now, the problem in that meeting, remember in the press it was reported that there was an offer of 10 rand before even that meeting. It transpired in that meeting that the offer of 10 rand is not really an offer. It's an offer of 10 rand for workers to go and negotiate it with their own farms. Workers. There's a 10 rand that says we can go above up to 10 rand, but you've got to go and negotiate with your own management individually in your own farm. And that's what the labor rejected, the issue of having to go in each farm and negotiate with the hope that they might get a 10 rand or they might not, depending on the farm situation itself. And in the meeting on Saturday, the farmers indicated that they don't have a mandate to negotiate. There's no mandate. They want a mandate. They said to the minister and us that they were meeting on Monday, that is last Monday, in Victoria in Agri-SA national meeting. And that meeting is going to be able to determine and give them a mandate. We tried to push and that should we meet again on Tuesday after the meeting in Victoria, they couldn't agree to that. We left on Saturday with no agreement. On Monday, another meeting was called now in Pretoria by the Minister of Agriculture. We had a discussion in that meeting. And in that meeting, the farmers' view was that in that meeting, the labor was not there. It was only the department contents and Agri-SA and Agri-Western Cape. And in that meeting, the farmers were of the view that there's nothing to negotiate about. Their workers have gone back to work. The situation is rationality. That was they said in the meeting. It was not the meeting couldn't go anywhere because you've got two parties. One party, which is labor, where they're saying that there's a problem, they want to negotiate for wages. The farm owner saying there's nothing to negotiate because the situation is normal, it's just intimidation. Workers have gone back to work. Therefore, they don't know why they should negotiate. There's no reason to negotiate. And they said, well, they are prepared to have a bigger meeting that will deal with issues of service delivery around the area, sanitation, water, clinics, the homeworks, and they said they need the Western Cape government to present in other departments that would be involved in that kind of service. And then the meeting broke down on those basis. Now, we look at the law presently to see what are the possibilities in this. The law presently, if you look at the VCA, there's a limitation. The first thing is that the limitation is that the minister cannot issue a sector determination within 12 months of the current sector determination. It says that you can only amend the sector determination after 12 months. You introduce a sector determination, and if you want to make changes, the changes in that sector determination can only be effected after 12 months. Basically, that's what the law says. Now, we also look at the law and we think also that the law allows the minister to suspend and cancel the sector determination. And we think there are differences here with our legal advisor on this issue. On, they are going to be issuing a notice. If we can succeed this Friday, the minister, acting minister, of basic education, who is an acting minister in the absence of our minister, will sign a notice today indicating the intention of the minister to cancel the present sector designation. At the same time, the acting minister will sign a notice today indicating her intention to introduce a new sector designation that will give the space to deal with this issue. Now, the issue that is still jury is not out yet, that there are differences on, is whether the section that he talks to the limitation that the minister cannot introduce sector designation within 12 months, is it applicable if that sector designation is cancelled? We trying to cancel the sector designation in order to open an avenue for the minister to introduce a new sector designation earlier. And that's the issue that there's a little difference on. I hope to really today and briefly in terms of the steps that were taken, and I spoke to Tony. Tony is adamant that there's got to be something on the table. And in terms of law, we can't put anything. The parties can't put anything, something. He says, even if it's a party-to-party agreement, if parties agree to put something on the table and they implement that, then there will be normality. But in terms of the processes, there's no way that the minister could now put anything other than starting the processes as I've outlined in terms of the law. Because he gets to tell me that if we disregard the law, the chances of that the minister will be challenged. Even if she delivers 115 second information, he's not going to be able to implement it, or somebody is going to run to court, and the court is going to interdict the implementation of the basis on that. Therefore, it will be a promise to workers that is not implementable, because we definitely show there would be a challenge, therefore we've got to do it by the book. Now, I've spoken to CMA just now to ask them to reconvene the parties. If the farmers on Friday were of the view that this issue is gone, there's no more issues, there's nothing to talk about, we want to check what are they saying today, because the situation is escalating instead of a situation that we are saying. And the CCMA is setting up those meetings with the parties to see whether can the parties reach an agreement, a party-to-party agreement, while we dealing with the processes to ensure that the legal process takes its course and are able to set that up. And that's the best that we can do, and that's the best that I can give to committee members in terms of information on the issue on the table.
The sectoral determination cannot be changed within 12 months, but at the same time you can change it. So is that what you said, Mkhalib?
Well, I mean, this is one of the differences. I mean, how long have
Well, you are not going to go away with it. If Section 55.7c says the minister cannot publish a sector designation within 12 months, and then you go around that by the calculation, the court might say might see it otherwise. We don't know. That's why I'm saying in that area, the jury out. But I think we see from our side that if we publish a notice to give the intention, and also symbolically to indicate so that the worker can see that, there are steps, although Tony, I'm told that the workers are not interested in the law, they're interested in the steps, they're interested in getting the money. But from our side, I mean, we've got to make sure that, and the ECC, the CEE is meeting, the ECC is meeting on Wednesday also. That's a symbolic gesture, because they're not going to be able to do anything unless the notice is published and that process takes its course. And that's what's coming up on the issue, is following the legal processes and the urgent need that, I mean, the people that affected, and for them, yes, the law is good, and decide on your case, but on this case, they are interested in the man on the table. And the problem is that farmers seem not to be interested to put anything on the table. It's just unfortunate that when it comes to everything else, the farmers are a unit. When it comes to making submissions in the sector situation, they come and agree South Africa has got a mandate. And when it comes to this issue, they say they don't have a mandate to talk about wage increase at all. But when it comes to tariffs, to what, they talk as organized farmers. On this issue, they say, farmer to farmer, no mandate for them.
Honorable Van der Westdijk and Honorable Masrumuli.
Chief, just
a quick question. Honorable Nyagemba.
First one, I know the sectoral determination was published like early in this year. From what date does that run? 1st of March. And then secondly, when is Minister Olifant expected to take honor duties again? Yes, I've heard that Minister Mosheka is currently standing in for him.
I think the horses are out there running already. Why don't we just leave it at that? Because I was under the impression that our oversight work, amongst other things, was to try and prevent this kind of this kind of disruptions, because we recommended very strongly, and it sounded like it was urgent that the Human Settlement Department come in, Rural Development should come in, Minister of Health should come in, Social Development, Health should come in. So it sounded like it was urgent, but here we are. I wonder what happened to our recommendations. So the ones are already out there. There's already a huge strike. I don't know what we're saying now. It's better to leave it at that.
Done. We were then by.
Honorable Manaman.
Thank you very much, Chair. Look, I mean, I think they are.
No, you must speak on my behalf after I have spoken. I think the we have received the brief. What know where things are currently, and to make comparison as to what inform us going there, because obviously once Parliament is there and then workers will say that their problems are resolved. Now going there without an answer, especially this time, because the strike now is not only in Tidores alone, it's in a way across the province. Now there are these suggestions that the department is looking at. The meeting of the ECC, which will meet next week. I think sometimes, even if it was a scheduled meeting, they need to look at things and bring it forward in order for, because obviously the meeting of the Employment Commission, what? Condition Commission, yeah. It's where all parties are there. Employers, labor, and government. If then this issue also can be looked at that level in order to assist what is it that the minister wants to do, I think it's better placed it can be done by that. And also the one who opts to them is trying to bring parties together. And I've said what the law says, because to just jump, for me, that's my personal opinion, sir, to jump and give notice of cancelling the current sectoral determination, was that not informed by any out of the two processes, CMA bringing parties together with a view of trying to resolve the strike, because the strike and nothing else is about the increased wages, irrespective of what the law says. I mean, the same law that we are talking about in Calipi is the same law that applies in the mining industry, where there's a collective agreement, and then a collective agreement is regulated in terms of Section 33 of the Labor Relations Act. But because of trying to resolve the dispute that exists, irrespective of how did it arise, but those areas were looked at. So for my relations, I agree with Honorable Masaremul, that I don't see us going there. That's what the department is trying to do, push hard. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Nyadimba. Is there any other comment on this matter before we move on? Yeah, from what I see, from what the members are saying, is that we don't have to go to 22 hours because we were there earlier this year, and they were still waiting a report from the department about the interventions that they were going to do. Actually waiting for a progress report from them. And I think it is on the in our program. And then we are going to get that report against around the 20th or the 17th or the 20th of this month. So the meeting is on the agenda. Yeah. The program. That item is on the program. Hey, the English has gone back to England. Yeah, it went back home. Where it belongs. Okay, Ricky Bowling Kachangan. Yeah, all the members, so the meeting, this matter will be on the agenda of our meeting at the 17th or the 20th. We'll be getting that report of our visit to the Durrance and other farming areas in the Western Cape. And moreover, there's a report that we wrote that went to Parliament, and we take it that Parliament has given notices to people who are affected by this, because I don't think it's done by us. You know, when we give the report to Parliament, Parliament will take those portions and send them to relevant organizations or relevant units or portfolio committees and departments in our. So we are not going to, my God, barricade the Durrance. Welcome, Honorable Ufana, and welcome, Bongwang. You're welcome. We are not going to the Durrance. Honourable members, we are going to deal with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. And some of it actually talks to the issues of farm workers. Can we have one meeting, please? I can see people are very busy. Everybody is gathering on the side. This amendment we are dealing with deals with exactly, you know, the issue of farm workers, about the relationship between the farmers and their employees, particularly in relation to the shops that they run. This matter appeared again when we visited the farms that time earlier this year. Who is going to make the presentation? Is it advocate can take us through the BCA.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. This morning, the working document before the committee is the one that speaks to the speech presentation this morning. The working document before the committee is headed basic conditions of employment in Edmundville, working job one, and the date on there is 7 November, so as members can see, a couple of days time schedule. But on a serious note, coming to the bill, the format of this morning's discussion will take on the same format as what was presented in respect of the Labour Relations Amendment Bill. The document before members is laid out exactly the same as the previous working document. So even though there's a keynote on top that is yellow and grey, there's no yellow in this working document. There's only two suggestions, two grey suggestions for insertion, but we'll get these in the course of this morning, hopefully. And then she just go into clause one of the rule, that was the definition section, and there's no issue that was identified to be put into the working document in terms of clause one of the rule. Before I continue, I should also just say that members may have noted that the working document, there isn't really legal issues on any of the clauses. What I've done is I've populated the document to keep track of discussions the committee has had on the bill, the issues that have come up. The issues that members did raise during the previous meetings are more decisions that members have to take. So it's a matter of emphasis that the members would have wanted to consider at a later stage, but they weren't necessarily flagged as legal issues for legal input. So going through the document, going to clause two of the bill refer to the new insertion of 33 capital A, which related to the prohibited conduct by an employer, and that is the clause, the proposed clause for insertion that speaks to the issue of employers requiring an employee or an aspirant employee from participating in some scheme or benefit that the employer or a person associated with that person, with that employer business, and so then manipulating an employee to participate in that scheme. And what came out during the previous meetings was that we made a comparison between the words in 33 capital A1A, require or accept, and I think at that stage it indicates to the members that when we do not define words in a piece of legislation, it takes on its ordinary dictionary meaning. And so in the document, all I've done there is set up the Collins Dictionary, which means require means to lay down, it's imperative, it's a command, an order. So basically, if we read 33, it says an employer therefore cannot now command you or instruct you or order you to participate in a scheme or business venture or whatever the employer or somebody associated with that business can run. We drew the contrast in 33 capital A with section, is it 34, let's just see if I've got that right, currently in the LRA, we drew a distinction, 34, and then to 34 capital A, which refers to benefits, a benefit fund such as pension, provident, retirement, and we said in 34 capital A, currently in the basic conditions of employment, in that section it spoke about deductions. And so here you can see that the employer, there's no deduction. You may, the prohibited conduct here is the requiring or accepting. We haven't even gotten into deduct yet. So therefore we said that the financial benefit in terms of 33 capital A was not to be understood that money actually left the hands of an employee or somebody coming into the business as an employee. So we have that whole debate and discussion on what the financial benefit is. Does it mean that, you know, you actually have to have had some benefit, or is it just in a calculation, a quotation? And I think we were in good old building when that discussion took place. So the working document is just reminding members that that was the issue that was spoken to, but there was no legal issue that came out. It was just for the members to decide whether or not that they were happy with the draft in what section 33 capital A seeks to the prohibited conduct. Chair, I don't know if you want me to stop after every clause. Chair, I don't know whether you want me to stop at after every clause and then members.
Yeah, no, Honourable Van der Westday, then.
May I just get confirmation, please? We have heard during the public hearings that some people were concerned that things like insurance schemes, etc., that employers compel their employees to belong to, that this may be contradiction to what we have here. If you could just confirm for us that you do not believe that such compulsory schemes may be in contradiction with the wording that we have in front of us.
Things, not only the burial, whatever things, and then there is the shops where people buy from, you know, you can't buy from any other shop except this one, it doesn't matter what the price is. And I think that is where the law comes in to correct that. You cannot force your employees to buy from yourself, you know, unless if there's a material benefit for them, you know. I'm trying to help us recap.
Thank you. It also includes things like safety shoes or uniforms where people expect of all employees to be dressed in a similar way, and they say you must buy your uniform, you must buy your protective gear, etc. It also includes tools sometimes employers expect. So, yes.
Honourable members, do I see any hand from your side? Okay. Advocate Gordon.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add that in 33 capital A sub 2, it does fall in that protection subsection 1B does not include a provision in a contract or employment or a collective agreement in terms of which the employee is required to participate in a scheme which then has the financial benefit in that. So it's not an absolute exclusion. What the section does is to say that our default position, our first position, is that you can't do this, but under certain circumstances you can. And that's what the sub 2 does. It creates that category where there would be this requirement where employees would have to participate in some scheme. But when that happens, then it has to be with a financial benefit crisis. And so it is built into 33A sub 2. Thank you.
Thank you,
the issue of safety equipment, what safety boots you need to wear, are regulated in terms of OSHA and it indicates what you're allowed and what you're not allowed. And if you look at this section, it does indicate that unless the package is not protected by any other statute. Now, if a statute that regulates that, then this does not supersede that statute that regulates that. In terms of this section, in the public sector, it's compulsory that would belong to the public sector pension fund. And I'm sure no public sector would want to belong to any other one because of the financial benefits to that fund compared with any other fund that's in the area. And that can be justified. What this will stop is if you do not have a collective agreement, there's no law that says that. Then it will stop a company saying, well, to work here, I've got to belong to this medical aid. They can say, you've got a medical aid to get a benefit. In this day that we're in, with debit orders and everything, there's no reason that you can only have a medical aid through stop order. You can have it individual, it's a debit order. And that's what it's trying to do, that you can't, unless you can prove that the financial benefits to that are beneficial. In the cellular industry, Vodacom and MTN, workers working for Vodacom, in Vodacom office, you have problems getting through MTN, especially working there. And they give incentive for them in terms of airtime and all of those issues. And that's the financial benefit that accrues to it. And as long as we can show that there's a functional benefit, the same, you've got to be a subscriber of the protocol if you work for protocol. These are the financial incentives that we give you for that. And also the banks
They don't say you must have your bond with us, but they say if you take a bond with us, you'll have a very favorable rate if you work for us. And that's what this is trying to say. You can do that through the corporation.
Does this law apply to Bremen too? Because in Parliament, you can only have an address of medical aid. And there's no benefit because you actually pay more and you get very poor service. Definitely. So this is breath of fresh air. Those who are sitting on the board of Parliament, watch this space. let's see, Honorable Van der Westhuizen.
Chair, I mentioned specifically the insurance part because medical insurance, none of us wins in terms of medical insurance. We all lose in terms of medical insurance. The only difference is we're spreading loss amongst the members of medical aid. So my question was just, can you then still speak of, for example, a medical aid fund as a financial benefit, and should it therefore not say financial and or other benefit, or even if we want to be more specific than that, saying then a financial or what you call it, risk-sharing benefit or something like that. But financially, I think in the strict sense of the law, of the wording here, medical aid is not a benefit, although people describe it as such, unless your employer links, additional compensation to that. And nowadays, with the latest trend towards what they call cost-to-employer packages, there's no benefit whether you belong to a fully covered medical aid or just a hospital plan, or whether you refrain from taking out any such insurance. And the question is, can you still compel people to spend their money on a medical aid fund which they feel is not beneficial to them?
Well, Chairperson, reform calls for yeah, you understand. Let me just come in on the medical aid issue. My argument is totally different to what Honorable Van Westhuizen is advancing. Because the beneficials to a medical aid is always the healthy ones that subsidize the ones that are not healthy. Or we younger ones subsidize the older ones, like yourself. So there are beneficials to our contribution. Because also when we are old like yourself, the ones that will be entering would be the ones that will be subsidizing us. So my argument is always it's not that everybody in the scheme benefits, but there are those that would benefit more than the other. So there are beneficials to medical aid contribution.
Just nowadays is the elder who are sponsoring them, the young ones. So what kind of work are they doing to the young
people? Now, Chair, what I was going to say is that the issue here on the medical aid is that specifically medical aid, today there's no reason for any employer to say belong to this medical aid. That's really no reason to have that. Because you can group together the same sharing of risk with other members who are not employed in this company. If you're members of Bonita, you're doing the same thing, but at a bigger scale outside your own company. And that risk sharing still remains. The risk sharing is not because all of you in this company are members of Bonita. It's because you are members of Bonita in the first place, and you share with others who are members of NSE. But if a company is able to say, well, in this company, in this medical aid, you pay less than Bonica. This is what, these are the benefits of Bonica. You pay less, getting the same benefits. That's the financial benefit that we're talking about. If a company is able to say that, they say, we'll give you a medical aid, that will show financial benefit in your pocket in terms of the fees that you pay, it will be lesser for the same benefit, or you'll get more benefit for what you pay. And that, and then they will say that it's incompatible, it will belong to Palmer on the basis that you are going to get financial benefit, and the benefit can only be about whether you pay less or whether what you buy with your rent, you buy more than what you buy somewhere else with your rent. And then if it cannot show that in terms of this section, it cannot be as a reason, a condition of employment. It cannot show that the savings that you make. And this is what it says. You can't have as a condition of employment a condition that you belong to that medical aid. And if an employer can't, I say, well, I can get another medical aid. I don't say that I don't want to be a medical aid member, but I can get another one cheaper with the same benefit. Why should I join this one as a pre-employment test? And that's what we're trying to deal with.
Honorable Anna, we are in trouble. So, let's go back to clause one. I think we need to choose. Or do, are we doing that now or... I need guidance here, I don't remember that now. I don't want to make the same mistake that we made in the first, in the LRA. Let's look at clause one. Are there issues that we're saying that there's no issue on clause one? Is there an issue that members would like to flag for way before we vote? Okay, nothing. Clause two, prohibited conduct. We need to be able to say we're taking this direction and not that direction on this one. It is well understood that I identify very well with the discussions here after having gone on this on a visit to the farms where workers actually at the end of the month they end up owing the farm. You get minus 17 rand. So you actually run out of 17 rand to pay your debt for the, you know. And people are made to purchase very expensive things that they could import at the spa, then they buy them for it for double the price. And in most instances, the shops, the ones that we visited, are not necessarily owned. The farmer says, I don't own the shop. The shop is owned by the missus. You know? And then this is the arrangement between the missus and the workers. You know, that is the farmer's wife. Mm-hmm. That's how they are referred to as. And that people are not under any obligation to buy them, you know. So it's out of their own choice. But then when you talk to the workers, they tell you, no, they are charging us for transport. They say they are buying these things from town, so they need to add that money on top, plus their time for purchasing, plus the interest that they are losing when because they take loans from the bank to buy the things. So. And if you pay after a month, you need to add interest, 30 days interest on the money that, you know. So that's why the goods are more expensive. And some people say that, no, but there are passes going to town, and when people want to go to town, they can go and buy. But the other reality is that when you get into some farms, they secure the gate, and if you go in carrying things that they are sold on the farm and you bought them from outside, you may have some problem like they do with hotels. If you, for those people who drink alcohol, if you go into a hotel where they say bar, they tell you, no, you can't bring your own alcohol here, we're selling alcohol, you know. So you are forced to buy from them. you know. So then you end up smuggling your drinks in your room, but it's not an issue if they find the empties. But I'm not sure about the farms if that is the that will be the same. I think it will be trouble if they find a bottle of Johnnie Walker Black or Chivas Regal or Green Label, Gold Label on the farm, and they don't sell it there. Obviously, I think the farmer will raise some eyebrows. Honourable members, there we are now. I think we need to decide what we're doing with this one, because the
which clause addresses your alcohol problem.
I'm not sure we should be protecting the chair. Can I do it?
Yeah,
because,
protect me.
Because to tell a person that he's got an alcohol problem is a very serious occasion. Can I just say, on a serious note, we fully support this. I think it's an excellent clause. As long as the legal team says no, all those variations that you've raised and that were raised in the public hearings are covered, and we don't see any legal problem with that. Then I would like to propose that we adopt this and then move on before your problems become even more serious, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 3 is in the bill.
I'm okay, Gordon. Clause 3. My toy was off.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 3 in the bill speaks to the amendment to Section 43 in the Basic Conditions Principle Act. All that Clause 3 does is to change the prohibition from employment to work. If members have a look at Clause 3 in the bill, the age, the 15 years, that is not a new concept. Everything else in Section 43 stays the way it is, but the section has been amended to make provision for the prohibition of work. And what the working document sets out is to basically just impart that there is a substantial change from work to employment, and that the prohibition of work comes from Section 28(1)(f) of the Constitution. The South African Constitution says no child, every child has the right not to be required or permitted to perform work or provide services that are inappropriate for a person of that child's age or place at risk for child well-being, etc. And that we would see currently in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act under Section 43 sub 2, which is in bold. So nothing substantial has changed other than the word work is placed in the word employment. Now, during previous committee meetings, there was this discussion on the parameter and what is understood by the concept of work vis-a-vis the concept of employment. I cannot give an absolute answer to the committee. Work is a very loose, it's a wide term. We've had the discussion and that debate. Safe to say that the ILO Convention looks at a prohibition, for instance, on child labour, and how countries apply it is determined by the domestic environment. So child labour would be big enough or a large enough phrase to include work and employment depending on what a particular country wants to prohibit. Now, the Children's Act that was enacted takes into account Section 28 of the Constitution. All the things that speak to children, social services, adoptions, age of majority, everything we find in Section 28 of the Constitution is housed in the Children's Act. All that is covered. Now, particularly in Section 141 of the Children's Act, it gives duty to social workers or to social service professionals who discover a contravention of the basic conditions of the Employment Act. So let's say somebody's in breach of Section 43, that they allow a child now to work. It's incumbent upon the social worker will be there to include that in terms of children. Now, the fact that the concept has been changed from employment to work, 43.1 has been adapted to include the word that a person may not require or permit. And in the working document, the not require or permit is now wider than employment. Because when we're seeking employment, you know, I come into your service, I render that service to you, you pay me. And we know what that relationship is. But now when we take away payment and what we understand as employment, work could mean different things to different people. It's a very wide concept. Now, when we say a person may not require or permit, it renders every person open to breach that if you do it. Whether you're a parent, whether you're an aunt, an uncle, an employer, it's wider than an employer and employee relationship. And I think that is what I indicated to the committee in previous meetings, that the work concept is not strictly employment. Also, if we look at the definition of employee in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, it says person who works for and then receives remuneration. So now that word work is in the definition of employee. And we just have to be careful when we are saying work of children now, because it's no longer employment. It's a wider category. Now, if members look at Section 43 in the Bill, Clause 3, Sub 2, a person must not require a child to perform work or provide services that are inappropriate, priceless. That is a test. It's a bolting mechanism that provides a safety parameter. That's a check balance. So if we are saying work is a broad term, there's a test that we can measure again. Whatever I'm in, whatever context I'm asking the child to do something, and that child is under the age of 18 in terms of the Constitution, the ILO standard, as well as this act we're dealing with. So if we're dealing with, let's say, a 14-year-old, and I say to that child, carry my bag on the golf course, if we remember that scenario, all the ugly little, all the caddies. And so if I say to a child, carry my bag on the golf course, I could measure that against 43 type 2, which says, if I'm asking that child to do that, would it be inappropriate for that child's age? Would it place the child's well-being at risk? Now, that is the test. But I need to point out that that test only applies when you are older than the school leaving age and 15. Because what we are saying in 43 is that under 15, you can't work. It's a blanket prohibition, unless. Now, what I've picked up just to look at this is that in terms of Section 50, sub 2B currently in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. It says the minister may make a sectoral determination to allow children in certain categories to be employed. And that is where we're speaking of our entertainment industries. So if I can get to the section, if I can just quote directly. Exactly. So Section 50 says that a minister may make a determination in terms of Section 43.1 to allow the employment of children in the performance of advertising, sports, artistic and cultural activities. So there the minister has this power to say that, in, for instance, our adverts on TV, these children can work. What I pick up is that in terms of Section 50, currently in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, it still uses the word employment. And it's not a section that had been identified by the Ministry of Labour for an amendment, a consequential amendment, because we know children are no longer going to be employed, they're going to work. So that means a minister can allow the work of children, so that would be up to you for a possible amendment. I think in the working document, on page 2 at the bottom, I've inserted that grey bit that is subject to, I'll explain that now, but it is subject to Section 52B, and that's basically the section that allows the minister to grant permission in certain sectors for categories of children to work now, even though the current act refers to employment. The reason why I'm proposing to you that this 43.1 be redrafted with the amendment to start that subsection with subject to, because what the new clause does is to say it, you may not require or permit a child to work. It doesn't say that you are now employer, so we understand that relationship. So if a minister makes a determination for children in the advertising industry to work, that minister could be seen to be requiring or permitting a child to work in breach of Section 43. So I'm proposing that we link 43 to 50. It's notwithstanding the subject to Section 15, because the minister has his power. But if you're not in that Section 50, then you're running the gauntlet if you fall far. So that is where my link is coming from. Should members accept that proposal, and I can say that the state law advisors and the department are ad idem, we are all in agreement on this point. We've done our caucusing before the time. So we're all in agreement that this needs to be linked. But the issue that I would raise with the committee is that Section 50 sub 2B seeks employment. So there may have to be a consequential amendment which falls outside of the current law, and that needs to be flagged. Chair, I don't know if there are any other issues that members would like to
raise. Linking 43 with 50
sub 2B.
That's okay. Honorable Hana.
Chair, I feel very comfortable because I looked at the principal act. There is no definition of work. And to me, that creates a lot of problems. Because even if you talk about the proposed amendment, Section 2A, it's very subjective. When you say a person must not require permit a child to perform any work or provide any services that are inappropriate for a person of that age. It's problematic. It can be debatable to say, but it's of that age. And we say there, for instance, at what point do you ask a child to wash dishes in the house? At what age do you ask them to wash dishes? Can I ask my son, who is 13 years, to just wash my car? No. That's why I'm asking that. There are certain things which inadvertently might make people commit crimes on certain things. Because you are not going to pay this particular person. That's your child. You can I send my child, who is 12 years, to go and buy sunlight to a shop? Or I can't. So I can't ask the minister to make a determination. So I know they must ask the minister to make a determination about it. I will not ask. But the thing to me is that if there was a definition of work, it would be easier for me to be able to address this.
Khalid, but why don't your child to go and buy your beer so they should be, if it's under 18, yeah.
Remember, in terms of children working by washing the dishes, the test is, what's the effect of the work? If, I'm going to use the example of the teaching, if you ask your 15-year-old to wash your family of three or four, wash the dishes, it's not an issue. Nobody can argue that it's above the child's age and it will affect the child's education. Let us assume that you've got the umpreen at home, slaughtering your cow and your goat, and you've got 500 visitors there. You ask your 5-year-old to wash 500 sheep. Then it's something different. Then you might be crossing the law. You can never, by definition, deal with this problem. The issue is going to be, if the inspector come in and say, this is child labor, they've got to show why child labor. If they say to the magistrate, we arrived, we saw this child washing 1,000 dishes, a 12-year child washing 1,000 dishes, and it took her the whole day, she could not go to school. Skin cannot help because of the water and all of those issues.
that they're showing that the work that you've given the child is beyond the age that is allowed. Now, for me, on all of those issues, sending her to the shop, if you stay here in Cape Town, you send her to go and buy groceries in Kailicha, you might have a problem. But if you stay here, send her to go and buy shop to the shop here in the street. You see, therefore, the cost has got to determine the extent of the work that you are giving and what the effect of that work is doing to a child. You cannot have a situation that says, well, washing dishes for you. There's no such thing. It's got to be done. As a parent, you should be able to decide. I mean, when I was a certain age, nobody asked me to wash dishes at home because parents knew at what stage I should be able to wash even the few dishes that are there at home. At what stage should I go out and collect wood? Because we didn't have electricity. We had to collect wood to prepare for the following day. Otherwise, you're not going to have hot water. And that's the parent's desire. But for me, the law indicates clearly, you see, if the work is detrimental to the child, the way it's been, it could be heavy. It's not washing dishes. You're asking the child to pick up a very heavy object. And it affects her back and all of those issues. It affects her schooling. She must do this work inside. Even the looking after your cows in your area, honor remember. It's not, it could be the same as the dishes, but if she must not, cannot go to school because she must now stand there and look after these cows and guard these cows of yours and she can't go to school, it becomes an issue. But if she must look after these cows one Saturday between 9 and 10, you are able to argue with the issue. It comes back to what extent is the work that children do at home affect their well-being, their ability to learn, and their ability to be children. And in that, we think parents can be able to make those decisions. And we do not think that there's any parent that would want their 9-year-old to do the work that will affect them negatively.
You'll go straight to jail for making your children, your 11-year-old child to wash 5 taxes that you own for me every day. After checking, then the child must wash the taxes, polish the tires. Honorable Nyagamba and Honorable Hanare.
Chair, I was raising my hand to say agreed across 3.
Look, I don't have a problem with the explanation. But the, when did you think you came back down the chair? I'm just asking, with these crews, do you have a...
No, we learned some of this thing co-creating and Nyagamba never been to a crash.
Okay.
Just like Honorable Mutau. I'm sure no Pabum Mango has died. He crashed with an iron jail. So he must have a crash. I'm not afraid. So you must bear with us. I'm be crashing. The school is not crashing. So I'm not that man like you. Honorable Khanar.
My understanding is that the intention here is to make sure that the children are not disadvantaged by being employed and being exploited and all that, you know. The problem I have here is that the wording is that when you talk just about work, it's so loose that because children are not only staying with their parents, they also stay with relatives. And in most cases, that's where a lot of problems take place. So to me, the intention of this clause is very clear. I agree with the intention. I have a problem with the way it is worded. I don't know how it should be worded. That's why I was saying, if there can be a definition of work, then I'll be comfortable. But if it's difficult to have a definition of work, I hope that everybody who reads will have the same understanding.
Yeah, I think we... But I know it again for sure that Honorable Madrumule is disadvantaged too. He has never seen the door of a crash as a child. There were no crashes in it. So I think we need to use ways that will qualify some of the things. If we say saying above, you know, work that is above whatever thing, or you know, that is not detrimental to the child's health, and his or her upbringing and all that, and you know, I think we need to use ways that will qualify. Yeah. Because that is the only thing we can do. Honorable Fender says it.
Thank you. Chairperson, I think that the paragraph that they will all fully endorse is the 43.2, where it actually qualifies what kind of work. It must not be inappropriate, it must not place the child at the risk, etc. The problem is that, in a sense, to my mind, 43.1 and 43.2. I won't say contradict, but 43.1 actually excludes 2. Because if 43.1 is looked at in isolation, then 43.2 seems to have no need to be in the legislation. Now, perhaps you can tell me, because people say sometimes in the law there's an and between 1 and 2, and sometimes there's an or between 1 and 2, etc. But if I look at 43.1 in isolation, it seems really to be more almost like a definition. And then 43.2 is the one that I think we all say, well, that's a wonderfully drafted sentence, and we're happy with that, and we will fully endorse that one.
Ms. Williams, followed by Advocate Gunner.
Thank you, Chair. I think firstly, just based on the early discussions with regard to work, if we define work, the text becomes objective. Then it would be the same thing, but we had examples here which shows that it's a subjective text. For example, washing dishes in one instance may not be permitted, washing dishes in another instance may be permitted. So in order to have a subjective test, because if we define it, it makes it objective, so this is a criterion, falls within this, there's no discussion, there's no test or yardstick used to measure. But if we don't have a definition and we provide these listed grounds as they provide, it's inappropriate for the first age, this is the formula you apply. So whatever work they do, work is, as anti-effect, is open-ended, it's big, it's vast. So if we apply this formula to whatever test you're doing, whatever the subject matter is, you apply the formula. And if you come to a certain result, you know that is prohibited. If you come to another result, you know that is not prohibited. So for that reason, when we define work, it becomes objective and not subjective. And I think the intention of this is to provide for subjectivity. If you look at our country, we are diverse. We have different cultures, because I know in certain cultures, for example, if you, from a certain age, you must say or tea on the tray when you get visitors. You know, it's just a expected. You're not even told, you know, when you're that age, you must do it, that type of thing. So I think you need to take into account that children's rights is not individual rights. We live in a society, so you take into account the role that that child plays in society, the role that family or that community plays in the child's life. So you take all those into account, and that's why I think it would be so much better to keep it subjective rather than objective, because we, at the public hearing, we heard lots of different examples. We heard in where we come from, this is how we do it, where you come from, this is how we do it, and we all have that same one, because we all come from, this is how we do it. I mean, the reality is, we do work, we do these things, and it's expected of us, because we are not, it's not our right, but also they say, we are, because of where we come from, and where we come from is because of who we are, that type of thing. So it's a broader circle, even the definition of child is not an individual, mustn't be taken in isolation of everything else. And in regards to the concern raised by the honourable members, the other one, when we look at 43.1, no person
must require or permit a child. A child is everyone, it includes all children from 0 to 18. So that's the child. The other one says no, a person must not require or permit a child to a child. So the two will include the 43-1. Because when you say a child, it doesn't qualify a child or limit a child to a specific age. It says child, so that extends to all children. So that would extend, because 43 limits to a child to under 15, under the minimum school leaving age. So that 43-1 limits it. But 42 is applicable to all children, because that's how we say child, which is applicable to 42-1 also, or 43-1.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add, as Ms. Williams said, that 43-1 is basically setting our category of children. It says 15 or younger or school leaving age. So it's basically up to the age of 14. Now that's important because when we look at the Constitution, I think in our previous discussions we indicated that generally the legal position is that a child is somebody up to the age of 17. And so that is what we understand to be a child. But for the purpose of 43-1, we're not applying that concept of a child. For 43-1, we're saying a child is 14 and younger, or minimum school leaving age, which in South Africa currently is 50. That's in terms of the Schools Act, and we check that in that city. Conversely, if we can contrast that to 44, Clause 4, which now deals with another category of children. And so with the category of 15 to 17, is now an almost another system that is in where they can be allowed to do certain things. Actually, I don't know if you want me to stop and see the first to deliberate further on Clause 3 before I go into Clause 4.
No, I wanted to ask Honorable Director Rai, what were the five things, Honorable Khanari, when you were six, what were the five things that you thought you could do better at the age of 10? In what? We are debating.
Anything you do or say can and will be used. Do you want to speak? Yeah, you can speak.
I would drive myself. I would laugh. I could play. I could go to school. And I could eat.
Okay. Okay. Can we? Is that all in terms of the? Okay. Yeah, we can go to.
I just wanted to know this: was he ever retired himself?
No, I'm going to get tired. You only midget at some point. Who grew to this size? Yeah, okay. Let's go to the close one.
Chair, I'd just like to take that issue that the proposed amendment to Clause 3 for the insertion subject to Section 52B is accepted by committee. Clause 4 also deals with the amendment in respect of changing the concept of employment to work for children. The 44-1 is currently in the Act, and so the words employment are consequently now changed with the word work. And there's a new one that's for an insertion, and what it does is to make the provision for the minister to set regulations for the IOO obligations. Members should take note that in 44-1, it's the person under the 18 which pointed out. So we're speaking of children here that are 15 to 17, and it's not 18-year-olds, it's 15 to 17, because the Constitution and the Children's Act and the Basic Conditions Act is a child up to, just before, I'm not quite sure the wording, but it's exclusion of 18. In terms of the Children's Act, majority is 18, so we cannot speak of an 18-year-old child. 18 is majority, so we're seeing 17 younger. So if we look at 44, it would be our 15, 16, 17-year-olds that we are looking at. And we are saying in this circumstance, and we can see that in 44.1, it says subject to 43.2, and that's the subsection just referred to, that it refers to all children. And there we can say now that even though there's a prohibition that you cannot perform work that is inappropriate or place a child at risk, in certain instances the minister can set regulations to increase those parameters, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. And then once again also the requiring that it's now a more onerous, it's beyond the scope of employment, that you require your permit. And that's all that section introduces. It's a consequential flow of section 43 that's been amended in clause 3. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, there we have the deliberations on, the explanation on the clause 4. Are there any deliberations from members? Agreed? Okay, all right. 5.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 5 is, there was nothing contentious. Clause 5 in the bill is just a consequential, also changing the reference to employment to perform work, so that's a consequential amendment. There was no issues or even debate on Clause 5G.
Okay, do you want to reflect that or agreed? Agreed. Thank you. Clause 6.
No.
Similarly, Chair, Clause 6, once again, a consequential amendment that flows from the employment, also to include the words to require permitted child's work. Nothing contentious, safe to say that it flows consequently in terms of the previous actions that were amended.
Okay. You want to say something? Okay. Anybody? Nobody? All right. Agreed. Clause 7.
We'll just rewind the tape and we say consequential amendments that flows from the previous clause. Same position, with employment being amended by work which flows from the previous amendment.
Okay. Yep.
The only one on this clause is very intelligent. Usually when I lay something, I must prove that thing has happened. Yeah? And here they say that the is for the part who alleges that work by that person complied with the provision of this act to prove that it was reasonable. But probably there must be somebody who said to me it is not in line with the legislation. Because I can't on my own initiate. Nobody can initiate to say the work being done by this person is in line with the legislation. The way is where it assumes that the person who alleges that work by that person complies with the provision of this act is the initiator. But this particular person is definitely reacting to somebody alleging that is a job which people are doing, and not in terms of the initiation. I don't know, it is very subtle, and it actually says, you must prove what I will allege, but it will be you who allege by your response. Mm-hmm. You know, like, inspector will come and say, this particular person is not 18. And then, in terms of this, then it's me who must prove that they are 18 or not. I think that's why you say. So, what does it, is whether it, as if I'm the one against whom the allegation is made, who's alleging, that what another person is questioning me about is me who alleges that. It's very...
Yes. Okay.
What I'm saying, but Chair, for simplicity's sake,
yeah.
It is worded as if I am alleging something, but when you read it, I will not be able to allege that. I must be reacting to somebody making the allegation.
What I understand you to be saying is that the way in which that section is structured or worded is in such a way that he who alleges does not have to prove the allegations, but the one who is being accused is the one who should prove the allegations.
But it's worded in such a way that the one who the allegation is against is the one who alleges.
I thought I understand.
Thank you, Chair. I think we must keep in mind, this is one of the nuances that I've heard as a alert versus beginning when we are changing the work to employment. Because Section 47 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act as it stands, prior to the possible amendment that's coming to this amendment bill, would speak to the issue of employment. Now, when you are alleging something foul in the ambit of employment, the employer usually has to show that what he did complies with law. And so there's that obligation on the employer. Similarly, if you employ somebody with work permit, somebody comes to the Department of Labor and says, Parliament is employing people that don't have a work permit. They're not South African. They don't have papers to be in South Africa. And so Parliament has to go and explain to the Department of Labor. The employer has been charged to show that what I did was right, what I did complied. And so that's why he perceives this allegation that's made that he alleges doesn't have to prove. He alleges is just making the allegation. And the employer would be the one that would ordinarily be charged with showing that what I did complied to law. Now I'm saying when we're changing the word employment to work, there's no longer this inherent employment factor. It's now a person and a child, or a person and it's just work. And so this is why perhaps now I have this perceived skewed relationship with owners, because it's still taking on the fundamental of employer, but it's now a person.
Okay.
The issue of age. If I come to your company and say, this person working here is underage, not supposed to be working here, because the DCA is 15, and below, above 15, under certain conditions, and you say, no, the person is with the right age. It's your responsibility in terms of section to say, yeah, an ID, this person was born on this age. And that's what it says. I mean, it's just, and the inspector can't prove otherwise. The inspector has gotten, somebody phoned the department and said, this farm is employing children. And the inspector goes there and finds people that she thinks as an inspector, they are children. She looks at them, all the people working, and says, this one, I don't think is of working age. And then say to the farmer, this one is not of working age. It's the responsibility for the farmer, because remember the farmer is the one who gives the employment. Even if we talk work, in any other situation, if I come to your house and somebody is doing something that we're supposed to be doing, it's for you to show that the person is off. I can't have that information who's making that. This is what it says here. It's reversing the honor towards the person that must have the information. Remember the DC agent who must have the information.
Okay. Are you fine?
I don't have such a problem with about who must prove. I don't have a problem about who must provide evidence. But the way it is worded here, it's like the person, as if it's you who is alleging. You are not alleging. The person who alleges that you are employing people who are not supposed to be employed is the one alleging. You have got to provide evidence. You are not. I don't think that.
Can we? Huh? Okay.
So the defendant says, I'm alleging that this person is underage. I'm alleging. You are alleging that this person is in the right age. That's what you're doing. You say, no, you're wrong. This person is of the right age. Therefore, you are alleging that this person is 17 or 18 or 19 or 20. That's what you are alleging. I'm alleging that this person is underage. Therefore, this says, you are alleging that the person is overage, can work in this, prove it. That's what this says.
Okay.
It does not change my allergy. It just put your response in opposite to what I'm doing. That's what it is.
Yeah. We'll have to also look at the two ways, which is allege and accuse. Okay. You still want to pursue this?
Why is the word not saying that the person against whom an allegation is made has got the responsibility to prove that the allegations are not true? Because you are making an allegation against me, and I'm saying your allegation is not true, so I'm obliged to prove. I'm not alleging, I'm obliged to prove that your allegations are not true. So why should it be worded as if I'm also alleging when I'm supposed to provide proof?
What does Honorable Khanar want to say in the
suit? Okay. Can we read that out? Well, we would understand. You were not here when you when you started confusing us. Because you started with confusing us a lot.
What I'm saying is,
you,
no, the real lawyers will not understand if I put it in this word. And the intention is for me to explain to the lawyers so that they can be able to think about whether the wording can be changed or what. That's really my intention. What I'm saying is that, simply this, you come to my farm, you make an allegation, and my responsibility is to prove that your allegation is not true. That's really, let me not say my farm, my factory in Indonesia. No. I'm saying, I've got a factory in Indonesia. I'm producing shoes. And you come there and you say to me, I've got a phone call which alleges that you are employing people who are underage. And I say, no, it's not true. So what happens then? If you say to me as inspector, I don't believe you, then you're challenging me to provide evidence that your allegations are not true because I have got evidence. But the problem, the way it's worded, is like my disagreement with you, my initial disagreement with you becomes an allegation. But that's why what you are wanting me to do is to prove that these people employed here are of the correct age to make the allegation. So why is it not, maybe it's a legal way, but why should it say that my disagreement with your allegation is an allegation? If I disagree with your allegations, why do you call it an allegation and therefore the honors is with me to prove?
It's a counter allegation. No, but essentially it is a counter allegation. Yeah. Okay, but can we look at that?
Thank you, Chair. I think that we should be mindful of the fact that Clause 7 in the bill, which amends Clause 47, only amends the employment, the employee work scenario. Whatever else was in Section 47 is currently in the Act. That's not being introduced, that is currently how the law is drafted. So that section has been around for as long as there's an age dispute. In the context of employment, that wording prevails. Thus, the current wording in 47 is not being introduced in the bill as new wording. It's currently on the statute book. And that is the way it is understood. It may seem to be slanted, it may seem to have an unintended consequence, but the application of Section 47 is correct. The allegations that are made, the application is correct. I hear what the Honourable Member is saying, but I don't necessarily think that the concern that Section 47 needs to be redrafted. I think that in the application of Section 47, the application is clear. Thank you, Chair.
Can we close it? I mean, my understanding of the point you're making is that a person goes and makes an allegation that he has employed a person who's underage. The counter allegation is that this person is not underage, and therefore here is the proof. Essentially, this is what clause 47 means, or basically suggests. You know, there's an allegation, and then there's a counter allegation. The counter allegation by the employer who's in the employment is that they have actually complied, and on the basis of that counter allegation, they then provide the proof that this is what. And I think the basic understanding that. I think generally is that if there's an allegation, but if you provide something to the contrary, it is not necessarily an allegation or a counter-allegation. And I think you're taking it from that. Yeah, okay.
Can I answer you first?
Okay.
And then go to the advocate. Your proposal, what you are saying, you are proposing that between who alleges, we must include counter. That's your... No, that's your proposal. Who counter alleges that the work by the person complies? That's your proposal. In a simple manner, that's
an allegation.
No, I'm dealing with the discussion here, because that's what you are proposing. What you suggest, madam, is that. This has been working very well. It's unfortunate that I grabbed this thing, which was intended to be amended. But as a member of parliament, when I see an opportunity to correct what is wrong, I grab that particular opportunity. That this is the wording here is problematic, and I believe it should be properly worded in such a way that the acting chair has captured it. That really what the acting chair says is that no, you are not alleging, you are counter alleging. That's what he said. That you alleged and I counter alleged. So what I'm saying is that I'm not the initiator of the allegation. I'm responding to an allegation which has been made against me. I just want that to be clear, that the way it is worded here, it's quite, to me, it's quite problematic. Because it actually puts the onus on somebody against whom an allegation is made. To prove that allegation is not wrong by saying that by disagreeing with me, you're making an allegation and therefore put your allegation. But I don't want to waste a lot of time. I think you understand what I'm saying. I'm uncomfortable with the wording. It might be agreed upon, but I'm really uncomfortable.
Okay, I think we note the concern, but there's generally agreement on that clause 7. Heading back to the chair to proceed to point A, plus 8. Oh yeah, our time is actually up. Yeah, you'll
No, but I think we need to let me give you an example about what we're discussing. We were in Mpumalanga about early this year with the minister. We went on a farm and there was this girl from Mozambique. She looked between 12 and 13 and the minister said, this one looks like a baby. And the farmer said, yeah, she looks like that, but she's I think 21 or 20, around there. And we asked, can you bring her ID? And he said, no, she came just from across the border in Mozambique. She's here with her mother. So the mother said she's about 20. So that's why we hired her. And I mean, anyway, even if she's not, even if the mother is here, she can't go to school. And she doesn't have relatives. So they live on the farm. So, and they were thinking that we'll send her to school next year. You know, if everything goes well with the child. But we had no proof about the child's age. And then an inspector went to the farm. Coming back, the child was not there. No, where is that girl? No, she went back home to do what? No, to collect some things for the mother. She'll be coming back next week. So I'm going to go to that farm again to prove that she's back. No. But I think when as the person who was accusing somebody that you have, you know, I'm the burden of proof lies with me because I'm accusing you. Or is it, does it go the other way? They say you are innocent until proven. No, the rest need to help us on this one. I think this is getting very, very interesting for me. You are, now there is this thing that if you are arrested, you need to prove. Who's supposed to prove? Who's supposed to prove the guilt? You know? And then after this, I think we should close before our first advocate Gordon.
Thank you, Judge. To rewind a bit, thank you. What was said to in your absence was that when you're looking at the Basic Conditions of Employment Act or the Labour Relations Act, in the context of employment, when an employer employs somebody, it's up to that employer to show that you've complied with law. And that is why when you have an inspector from the department coming to knock on your door as an employer, it's up to the employer to show. And in this context, as the department just indicated, it's a dispute about age. So the employer, or whoever that person is that allows the person out to work, to show that that person, in so requiring or permitting that child to work, has not flouted the provisions of the basic conditions of the employment. Thank you.
Thank you. I think let's digest this overnight. Let's digest this overnight. I think it will be first item on the agenda tomorrow. Oh, you are agreed?
We agreed, the chair.
Oh.
We agreed on clause, but the way it is worded. So over the night, we'll be trying to make my honorable member understand what is this all about.
That any other normal person would see and say, yes, they will agree with me. You know, any person who is this will agree with me. That's what it means. And that also shows that anybody who is not part of this particular portfolio committee, when they read this section, they will reach the same conclusion that the people against whom an allegation is made are expected to prove.
Let's meet again tomorrow. Just wait a bit. Oh, we'll meet next week, Tuesday. Okay. And next week the lawyers won't be here. We'll have the state law advisor and the permanent lawyers. Most of their work is done, but not that we are releasing them. No, they are not going on strike. No, they are not going to Marikana, they are not going to Titorans, they are going to Namibia, they are importing their prayers into Namibia. Let's meet next week, Tuesday.
Just a little trivia, it's a minor thing, but it's quite interesting. The last time we discussed this bill, we stopped at exactly this point. Thank you.